Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Captain's log, stardate 47653.2. We're performing field tests of our new tactical systems and weapon upgrades. Mr. Worf is supervising the exercises. That's right. Welcome back, Trek fans, to another episode of the Hit or Miss Star Trek and to our Halloween special for this year. Opening with a little bit of Trek Halloween of yesteryear with a little bit of cat's ball there. Ooh, spooky. Yes, welcome to our special Halloween edition. This week, we're doing the Monster Mash aboard the Enterprise D as we unravel the creepy, crawly chaos of the next generation's Genesis. I am your regular host, Captain Mike. I can't be bothered to come up with a spooky Simpsons name. Just work it out yourselves. And joining me in this evolutionary nightmare are my guests. First up, please welcome back a returning guest, Justin Avery Smith. Welcome back, Justin.
Hello. It's great to be back.
Awesome, awesome. All right, looking forward to talking Genesis and some other spooky treats.
Oh, yes. Make it. Let's make it so.
Indeed. And also, after the ghostly shenanigans of Sub Rosa, we had to invite him back for the Halloween special. Please welcome back Dag.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, we only seem to have you on for weird, bizarre episodes, it seems now. But yeah, what a niche to fall into. Anyway.
This and time travel. It's my niche.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, that's true. Together, we'll dive into the weird, wild world of de-evolving crew members, because who doesn't love seeing Worf turn into a venom-spitting monster or Barclay scurry around as a spider? Probably me. But before things get too primal, we're going to start with some friendly banter in the section that I call Hailing Frequencies Open.
Hailing Frequencies Open, sir.
So, I'm going to forego the kind of usual questions because it's Halloween, or it will be in like 5 days when this episode goes out. So I have to go around and ask one at a time, what are your favorite, scariest, spookiest moments in Star Trek? And yeah, I'll come to you, Justin, I think, to ask you this one.
My favorite, scariest, spookiest moments. I will say, interestingly, one of the few Trek moments that genuinely like has made me jump is... the Spider Barclay jump scare in this episode. Like, that was like, that genuinely made me like, you'll go, ah, because I don't think I really got this. It was an episode that somehow flew under my radar when I was younger, but then like when I watched every single episode while in quarantine and I got to this and I've sat down and had a proper look, I was like, ah, and which doesn't happen a lot because, you know, Star Trek, yeah, it's dabbled in. I mean, of course, there's also the Thaw Voyager. That whole thing is just like nightmare fuel, like some sort of like creepy Twilight Zone. But that's a whole other episode with those two, you know, genuinely, unsettling, moments for me personally.
Fair enough. I mean, that's more than you would kind of think. When I was doing some research for this episode, I was kind of surprised how many things I came up with that were kind of spooky or that were themed in such a way. But we'll get to some of them because we've got another section coming up. Hopefully, we won't step on any of those. As I ask you, Dag, what are your favorite scary or spooky moments throughout the Trek franchise?
The top two both come from TNG. I was watching this, before my teens. Like, it ended when I was 12. So I was pretty young when some of these episodes came out. But the scene in Night Terrors where Beverly is in that cargo bay and all the corpses start sitting up terrified me.
Okay, I just want to add and interject. I'm pretty sure that goes on my list as well, but I think it freaked me out so much I basically blocked it from my memory. That's why I didn't say it.
So you basically repressed it.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, so that scene mimics a scene that was filmed for a movie that came out probably close to that year, Flatliners, where they're experimenting with death, and the same thing happens to Julia Roberts' character.
Yes, indeed. I've seen that movie. Kiefer Sutherland, I think, is in it as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, a lot of good actors were in that, including in Caretaker. The woman who welcomes Janeway to the caretaker's array, the old woman, she's in Flatliners too.
There's a Trek connection to everything if you look hard enough, really, isn't there?
Oh, she's actually my friend's grandmother, which is awesome.
Oh, really? Wow. Oh, wow. Then you are the Trek connection then in this particular case.
Oh, God. It's awesome. Like instead of Kevin Bacon, it's like 6 degrees of Trek or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be a great, great episode thing there, Mike. 6 degrees of Trek. It's a little game show. There you go.
Yeah. It's not a bad idea, actually, because, well, you'd be surprised, again, probably how many links there are there. At least people we've met, I guess. But anyway.
Yeah, my second episode. My second episode is the scene in the holodeck where Worf, Riker, and some other people are building the table that they have experienced an abduction on.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The end of that episode, seeing the Solanogen-based life forms, not creepy at all. It's like, oh, fish people wearing robes. Cool. I play D&D. Yeah, they're just cultists. It's fine. But just that scene in that episode, it triggers all of my watching Unsolved Mysteries with Robert Stack and all the alien abduction episodes that terrified me until it was now.
I see. Yeah, that kind of does play onto that primal idea, I think, doesn't it? Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I honestly forgot about that episode as well. Like, for some reason, this is why I don't watch, like, I've never seen The X-Files or anything like that, because that's just stuff that's, like, creeps me. This is something I did have up top of my notes, is that these types of episodes, like Genesis, they're honestly, like, these type of episodes are not, these are the episodes I dread the most when I see them. It's the ones where, like, something comes on the ship and basically, like, for one thing, like Night Terrors, like the game where something comes on the ship and, like, makes characters behave weird and not act like themselves, or, it's like that. They all remind me of, like, that scene in Pinocchio when the boy turns into a donkey or something like that.
That was a childhood trauma, I think, for a whole generation. No, maybe more than one generation of us. Yeah, I can see what you mean with that. Absolutely. For my part, I was just thinking, in terms of favorite kind of spooky, scary moments, I like a little bit of cheese every now and then. So I enjoy Catspaw for what it is from the original series. And other than that, I can't really add to the ones you've mentioned, Dad, because you were coming up with a lot of them. Although I wouldn't necessarily say this is a favorite or enjoyable, but I have to say that the one thing that to this day still traumatizes the crap out of me is the transporter accident from the motion picture. I don't know why, but that's just, that is chilling to the bone.
Probably because you see just like a small taste, like a small flash of like what Starfleet got back, so to speak.
It's not so much that with me as the kind of primal scream.
Oh, that too.
the way that they interweaved that audio clip of the scream with the transporter effect just to make this shrill, excruciating moment. And, you know, in universe, like, poor Rand, man. She just was supposed to beam somebody up.
Yeah,
nobody told her that the transporter stuff had been, they mentioned it like 5 seconds earlier. Oh yeah, we've taken the transporter stuff offline or removed something from the transporter. Yeah. It's like, you think there'd be a safeguard in the console. It's like, hey, don't do this. People will die.
Yeah. It was a little bit passive aggressive as Kirk as well to immediately go like, it wasn't your fault, Rand. Like, I really wanted it to be like, I didn't say it was.
I can only speculate, but I feel like if I'd seen the original series and then went to theaters, and this was like the first, you know, as the motion picture was released for the first time, like, I would have been like, really, like, 10 years on, we still haven't saw, because there's at least like 3 episodes in the original series where, you know, that center around transporter malfunctions. It's like, really, we didn't get around to working on this at all.
Just one of those things that the Star Trek staples, transporter malfunctions, and then as soon as they invented it, the holodeck malfunctions. Those are the two types of story you're always going
to
get.
Well, and that's why they had to invent the holodeck, because it was part of the TNG Bible that the transporter wouldn't malfunction like that anymore.
And I can only assume that Roddenberry got
so much hate mail from, you know, TOS for having that transporter accident that he was like, okay, we're never doing this again.
And then it turned Picard, Guinan, and Rowan to kids.
I was going to say, I think it was probably after after Gene had passed, like a lot of other things, that they were like, we can do it now. Because I remember a lot of transporter accident episodes of TNG, but I think they were after like the 4th, 5th season. As you say, the one where they all turn into children, or the one where Barclay's terrified of the life form that's in the matter stream. Or
both of which are 6th season. Thomas Riker. So that's 90, 92, 93.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Second Chances was another one. What season's that? If your memory's better than
also 6th season.
See, 6th season, they're just always doing transporter accidents. So that's anything else you guys wanted to shout out of the Halloween themed episodes or scary things?
What about Identity Crisis, where Geordi turns into the weird black light spandex glowing eyed alien?
Oh, that's freaky.
I was like you with the Solanogen based life forms. I was just like, yeah, this is just a terrible effect. The show doesn't look scary at all. He just looks like he's wearing a leotard with a Tron effect on it.
When you're 9 years old, the reveal in the holodeck where he's like, computer, take away this person. Computer, take away this person. And then there's a shadow, and you're like, what's casting this shadow? Unknown.
Yeah.
That was freaky. Also, I feel like, for my money personally, it gets an honorable mention shout out to Voyager, Haunting of Deck 12.
Yeah, although it's kind of, I see what you mean.
Want to make a difference in your community, but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously, your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Oh, and before I forget, I just recalled the Enterprise episode Impulse. Basically just a haunted house story with the crazy Vulcans.
Well, and if we're going to go back to transporter accidents, the Enterprise episode Daedalus, where the transporter inventor's son is stuck in a transporter beam.
Absolutely. Or for that matter, Jutrell as well. I don't suppose that's really the same, but yeah, there's a lot of kind of psychological things. I'm thinking of Frame of Mind is quite a psychologically disturbing episode if you're into that kind of horror.
Hard to follow.
Yeah.
Really? I never thought of it.
I realize it's probably the closest we get to like Christopher Nolan Star Trek, if you know what I mean.
Okay, now I like it more.
Okay, thank you. Because it's the same thing where it's like, it's like Inception or, Tenet or one of those where it's like, what's real, what isn't, and it's all like a little trippy, or Memento where it's like, it's all kind of trippy. but it's like, you know.
It's like how Move Along Home is 10 times better when you think of it as an escape room episode.
We said the same thing in the review. Right, that's fair enough. I'll conclude that there and move to the next section then, which is the section that gives the podcast its name. It is the This Week Spooky Hit or Miss section.
What about my performance?
I'm not a drama critic.
So, what we do, if you're new to us or, you know, you need a refresher, the hit or miss section is basically where I pick four things. We're going with four just to keep things moving here. Four things from anywhere in the Trek universe, pop them on screen if you're watching on YouTube or for our guests. And if not, we'll describe them. And we say, do you think it's hit or a miss? Debate back and forth, come up with a consensus and take it from there. I have been dotting in things from controversial, divisive, sometimes crap episodes to fit in with the theme of this series. But when it comes to this one today, it's up to you to decide if any fits into this category, because I decided instead to go with Halloween theme. So these should all at least be things that fit into that kind of, you know, the more macabre side of Star Trek and things like that. So we're going to start off, as I often do, with a ship, because I'm a ship guy. But like I said, this is Halloween theme. So this isn't just any ship. This is a very special haunted ship. So ooh, hit or miss for Alice. And Justin, I'll come to you first.
Are we talking about the ship itself, or are we talking about the...
Anything at all. I mean, we've discussed the episode, but I mean the ship or and what the ship does, the kind of plotting. You don't have to talk about just the aesthetics of it, because, I mean, it's fairly boring.
I was about to say, because the episode as a whole, I mean, I'm not opposed to the, but it just kind of plays like a paint by numbers, like Star Trek Christine. So,
mm-hmm. Glad you said that, because, yeah, that, I always thought of it as being Star Trek does Christine. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like, which I mean, I'm not inherently opposed to, but just from my and bear in mind, it's not an episode I frequent, so that's why I'm just like. But I think that enough says that I never thought, oh, this is worth a revisit. Should
no, you know, say, it's not terrible. I mean, it's effective in what it does.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's fine. I mean, it's like, I mean, I hate to say anything even remotely negative in anything regarding to Star Trek or just art and things people work on in general, but.
Don't be afraid. We do this quite a lot.
Okay. Well, I still like, I mean, I like to be like Picard. I like to be diplomatic and that sort of thing.
Fair enough.
So, but it's firmly like good, not great. But if I have to, like, if it's hit or miss, I have to say it doesn't come near enough to it to for me to qualify it as a hit. So I have to say miss. I'm very sorry. I feel bad.
That's fine. That's okay. That's okay. We asked the question for a reason. So what about you, Doug? Hit or miss for Alice?
I would say on Creepy Factor, definitely a hit, considering it showcases the last operational malfunctioning Neuralink implant.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I didn't think about that. That's true.
That's where I'm leaning towards as well. I was going to say hit because, I mean, the design of the ship's fine. It's not bad. It's not good. It's a generic kind of shuttle-looking thing all in one tone of green. But it must have been decent because they reused it for multiple other ships, as they often do as soon as they invent one of these things in the 90s Trek. But yeah, I liked that idea. Like I said, the Christine type idea in a sci-fi context of like the neural link and him seeing a representation of Alice as a woman and then learning that it's kind of done this to other species. And so the same woman appears as an alien in a kind of creepy way. And so I liked it for what it was in terms of the effect it had. And then, like I said, at least you got a good, because I'm quite a fan of them trying to do spooky things, but then giving you a clever sci-fi explanation for it at the end. It's part of why I enjoy Doctor Who. Like, it'll do vampires and ghosts and werewolves, and at the end just be like, but it wasn't really supernatural. It was, of course, just an alien life form that appeared that way. So, yeah, one of the episodes I think that I kind of enjoy for what it is. So I would say here as well.
Yeah. Some sort of anaphasic life form. Sorry, you know, I couldn't help myself.
You're
yeah,
not just... Nana.
I just like to think that somehow Elon Musk's Neuralink technology accidentally like absorbed the spirit of a woman from the 21st century and she just ended up in the spaceship 300 years later.
So that's what happened to his ex-wife.
Yeah. I mean, given all the women he's fathered kids with, we can't rule it out. Yeah.
Hey, it's better than being buried on a golf course.
Oh,
well, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, well, very
maybe that's the maybe that was the whole woke mind virus he was warning us about.
Oh, good. Oh, God.
Extended laugh track.
Anyway. I'm going to move to the second thing there and move swiftly along. So the second thing, on the hit or miss, because we've decided, you know, Alice was a hit, I think, in the end. The second thing on the section this week is a character from a twisted universe mirror to our own who ingratiated himself and impersonated one of our very own officers. Lorca, hit or miss Lorca. For the character of Captain Gabriel Lorca.
Yes!
Doug, over to you, hit or miss.
I love Jason Isaacs, and I love everything he did to make this character walk the line between sinister and endearing.
Okay. Definitely. Awesome. I'm glad to hear it. So you're obviously a fan. I kind of gathered when I could hear you thinking, oh, be Lorca, please. So yeah. So what about you, Justin, hit or miss?
Oh, yeah, no, obviously a hit. Like you said, Jason Isaacs, I appreciate it. Definitely a hit.
Yeah. I kind of have to agree. I would have hated the character if he was just meant to be a Starfleet officer. So, but I think part of the reason I like it is that they effectively kind of got me, I think, quote unquote. I kind of figured out the reveal way before it was actually official in the series. But I remember being mad for the first couple of episodes and I was like, Starfleet captain wouldn't act like this. And then when I realized what they were doing, I was like, oh, okay. All right. And as you said, I think with that said, Jason Isaacs was a great performance. And he did kind of manage, I think, just to skirt that line a little bit, that it wasn't overly obvious, especially when you look at some of the Mirror Universe performances in every other series where they're really broadly mustache twirly and stuff. So, yeah, I thought it's a shame, as I'm sure everybody keeps saying, it's a shame we didn't get to see the real Lorca at any point, and I don't think we will now, because it'll be interesting to see how Isaacs would play him maybe a bit differently. But, yeah, I mean, maybe just because it's a compelling actor that I just enjoyed watching, especially when you know that they're not like rewriting, you know, what a Starfleet captain's meant to be. And yeah, story was interesting in the end. I liked his kind of paranoia. I liked his, you know, what you found out what his mission was and what he was up to and stuff. And yeah, I think it's a bit of a loss. I kind of thought when they killed him off, spoiler alert, that he was going to come back in some form or another in the series. And I remember having a conversation on what was Twitter saying, like, oh, I guarantee you that Jason Isaacs will be back. I'm not worried. And then Jason Isaacs himself was just like, oh, I have bad news for you. No. As far as Lorca's concerned, I think we're all going to say pretty big hit, actually. So, yeah. Let me just get up my third thing. We've basically already discussed, but I had it on the list. And so, you know, I'm gonna stick with it. So it is an episode. It is from Next Gen, much like the episode we're looking at. And it is the episode Night Terrors, which is already covered. Justin, you can go first this time, hit or miss.
I have to admit, this is very hard for me personally because it's one of those things where it's like, it's so okay, you know what? I'm going to be generous. I'm going to say it's a hit because it does genuinely make me uncomfortable, which I can tell is what they were going for. You know, this wasn't meant to be, you know, like some sort of romp. So I would say on that alone, I mean, it's the same way, like, you know, like, yeah, if we're basing on how much you enjoy it, like, yeah, it's the same thing with, like, you know, Hereditary. Like, Hereditary is not meant to be a fun watch. So yeah, it's the same thing. So I'll say, you know, because it's clearly what it's setting out to do and how it achieves it, it's a hit.
I can see, I can understand that. Yeah, it's effectively disturbing, basically. So it's a good way to put it, I think. Well, how about you, Doug? What do you make of Night Terrors?
Aside from that one scene, it's kind of a meh episode to me. I do kind of appreciate the ingenuity at the end where they're like, wait, they're sending us a signal, but is it the ingredient they have or the ingredient they need? Well, if I could only transmit a limited signal, I would broadcast the ingredient I need. So let's dump some hydrogen into the void and see what happens. Kaboom! Everyone wins. So the teamwork always gets me because I love that about the various episodes and movies of Star Trek. Otherwise, like seeing Marina Sirtis dangle from a harness the entire time and then listening to her Comic-Con like rants about that episode about how horrible it was, I'm just like, okay, I get you. Yeah, you know, I'll give this one like a 3.5, you know, stars.
Well, still a hit.
Is that a hit? Where's the miss mark?
If you're going out of 5 stars, I'd basically say, you know, 2.5 would be exact middle. So before that is miss, above that is hit.
See, in the US, if it's anything less than 5 stars, it's a miss. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
I'll say that's like a solid D or like a C minus or something like that. I think three and a half. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah, I could buy it.
Well, it's a skippable episode for me. Like if I'm like, yeah, I'm not really into it, I'll just skip it. But yeah, there are some very keen moments as the crew is falling apart because they can't hit Rem that are really nice interactions.
Yeah, I think that's partly what I was going to say is that I'm kind of between you guys. Like, I think it's a decent enough episode. I wouldn't necessarily say it's something you can just skip entirely. Not that because anything great happens in it that you don't want to miss, but I just don't think it's you know, oh, don't watch it, it's terrible. There's things I enjoy, and the majority of that is the character interactions and the way they kind of, like you said, work together as a team and the effect it has on them and the little investment.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Investigation aspect, which are always quite good at Next Gen when you're basically figuring things out with them. I liked this kind of, you know, floating on a wire type scenes, but now that I know that the cast hated them and were probably uncomfortable, I feel bad for saying that, but I thought they were effective enough. They did what they had to. And as a very final geeky side note, I liked the ship, the Britain, even though it was, you know, ship I'd seen 1,000 times before with a different name. So yeah, I'm gonna say hit. So I think we can probably come down on the side of soft hit, maybe, on that one between all of us.
It's like a tap. It's a touch. It's not a hit. It's like, you know, subtle contact. Sort of, you know.
Yeah, exactly. What's it called? A bunt in baseball.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
I only know that because of Star Trek, damn it.
Oh, I only know that because I did Little League, and that was probably the best I could do whenever I was at the plate.
Oh, I'm sure it would be if I ever played. Anyway, so moving to the fourth and final thing. This is a species. They're included on the spooky section because they're a species who had an entire episode where there was a zombie, one of them, and they're all gross and walk around in waste and stuff. So hit or miss for the Mailon species. Dag, it's your turn to go first, I believe.
Ah.
I have stumped you.
I'm never a fan of a species that's made to look like they don't give a crap about, you know, general safety practices, even for an industry that, like, in any industry, like, if you sacrifice your workers, no one's gonna work for you anymore. So that part is what I don't like about the Mailon. But what I love about it is this idea that, like, oh yeah, we still have to deal with trash in the 24th century, and these guys apparently haven't figured out how to use fusion for that, so they're just gonna dump it in space. Okay, that works.
Yeah.
It sets up a cool sort of interaction between Voyager and the Mailon there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're not my favorite, and to tell you the truth, I totally forgot they existed until you brought it up.
They're in three episodes, I think? Maybe two, I'm
like
not sure.
Two or three episodes with them?
Yeah, the ones I remember are Knight and Juggernaut. Like I said, Juggernaut, especially because it is, they full-on play it up like it's a zombie that B'Elanna encounters, and it's a really scary episode, which is why I always think of it around Halloween time. Yeah, anyway. So where did we come down on that? Hit, miss, somewhere in the middle?
Miss.
Okay, fair enough. So how about you, Justin?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm gonna fall back to my, like, criteria when I was, you know, when I was doing Night Terrors, which is like, because I do, same where I do like this, you know, like there's clear, like, you know, like real world connotations and connections, and, you know, like Star Trek always does. And you could really tie that back to, you know, big polluters of nowadays and that sort of thing. And, you know, you could like juxtapose that with, you know, how Voyager, you know, safely just, you know, deals with their own waste, whereas they're just basically polluting space. And, you know, I mean, definitely they're a very mid species overall. And, you know, I mean, and yes, they were in three episodes, but, you know, but three episodes of a show that had like over 100 episodes. And the fact that, again, yeah, when you said the Malons, I had to, my gears were spinning trying to remember, like, oh, who they were and like what, because it's been a while since I've rewatched any episode of Voyager. So that was why I had to think to myself. And, I mean, I'm going to be a rule breaker here and call them a bunt, if that makes sense.
Well, we say soft hit, but I'm willing to accept soft hit.
I'm going to say soft hit then. Yeah. Because, yeah, exactly. Because of those.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very much in two minds as well. I don't know why I keep putting things on where I'm, you know, I'm in the middle, because I have to come down on one side or another. But I would just say that I agree with you, Dag, that I like the, and I think Justin, you said the same, I like the idea of they were a villain that wasn't just, you know, oh, we want to conquer the world or the galaxy or the most obvious villain things. And there was something interesting to me about the idea that they were a villain because they were polluting or because they just had no regard for, like you said, safety or the environment or whatever. To that end, I kind of like the aesthetic of them just looking like they're constantly kind of dirty and have melting bits of flesh, and, you know, they're gross, basically, which kind of adds to that effect. But I also don't like the idea that sometimes Trek will posit that, like, all species are a monolith. So I'm sure there are probably Malon who don't work with garbage, you know what I mean, aren't like this, but we never got to see them. And that's, yeah, so I have two minds with regards to that, but also, yeah, I just think there was an interesting idea to be played with that they could perhaps have done a bit more with the idea of, you know, Voyager was trapped in the Delta Quadrant and really should have been failing on resources and having situations like this, but they never were. So instead you had the pristine kind of, you know, Starfleet ship encountering this, you know, this species that were just like, yeah, we're just trying our best to get rid of our waste, chug along, do our thing, you know. And, yeah, it's a shame they didn't sort of get into more of the moral side of that. But I suppose they did in other ways in other episodes. But I'm just going to come down on the side of slight hit, I think, because, yeah, they were interesting enough, especially considering they weren't overplayed. And Voyager did have a miss with a lot of the villains. And I just like the fact that they were also the motivation for building the Delta Flyer, because you had to build up a shuttle quicker than they could to rescue some probe or something from, if I remember correctly, from a gas giant. So kudos, you basically invented got us to invent a cool shuttle. So yeah, I'm gonna say very soft hit for them. Right, so if that out of the way, then we can move on to the main episode review, an episode that was picked by me. I don't know why. Oh, that's why, because it was specifically, we were looking at Halloween themed things, and I thought this is very B-movie, so it seemed weirdly appropriate. So, yeah, we're looking at the Star Trek The Next Generation episode, Genesis. Before we get into it, I say this all the time now, but if you've been listening for the last couple of series, you know that I've stolen an idea from the Delta Flyers podcast, which is to do little bits of poetry to sum up the episodes we're looking at. So I always do a haiku and a limerick, and just because it's Halloween doesn't mean that today is any exception. So I'm going to go and ask you guys, and hopefully we'll get a consensus. Which would you like to hear first? And I'll give the second one at the end of the review. But would you like first the limerick or the haiku?
Haiku.
Ooh, Justin?
Oh, I was going to say limerick.
So this has never happened. You know what? I'm going to give the haiku, because I think I could do with some levity by my thoughts at the end of the review. So... yeah, people are going to probably hate me, so I'd rather save the slightly funny one for the, if indeed it is even funny, for the end. So I'm going to jump in with the haiku, which is a little boring, but again, you're limited with your syllables, and hopefully it's at least good. So my haiku for this episode is as follows. Protomorphosis, regressing us in some way. We were once spiders. Yeah, I have a big issue with one of particular part of this episode. One of many, I'm sure. But anyway, we'll get into all of that later. First of all, though, I do like to go around before I dive into the kind of boring behind-the-scenes stuff and ask if you can remember the first time that you saw this episode, Genesis, and what your initial thoughts were at the time. And let's come to you first, Justin.
Oh, yeah. Now, this is very interesting because my earliest memories of this episode is it was being a very little kid and as so often happened in my house, just playing on the TV. And I'm pretty sure it was in the middle. It was the scene where Worf is trying to break into sickbay. Because it's like a snapshot in my brain of, I just remember seeing, the ship was dark and some big monster was trying to break down the door. And I just remember feeling like that unsettling feeling you have when you're a kid and you see scary things on the TV, and that we've all been there. And that was one of my earliest, memories of this episode. I don't remember watching it. Maybe my folks thought if I saw the episode as a whole, I would have nightmares. My folks are not scary movie type or horror. Like I said, they never watched X-Files or the Halloween movies or anything like that. I very much had to go rogue when it comes to exploring anything related to horror.
Well, I can understand why, certainly with you being, I presume, younger than us, by what we've said so far, I could certainly understand why this would be an episode where your parents would be like, maybe not. Maybe not just yet. What about you then, Dag? What was your initial impression, if you can recall?
I loved this episode. This episode came out, ironically, not during Halloween. It came out a week before my 12th birthday in the middle of March.
Wow, okay.
So what a wild place to put that episode. But I was so hyped for this episode because at the time, I was way into Jurassic Park and this whole thing of using genetics to tweak people and live and all that other stuff. And at the time, I didn't even care that they had gotten the whole sensation of evolution wrong. And if they had just used, if Data had just said, I believe the crew is mutating, they'd be like, all right, that solves all of the problems because it's weird. Mm-hmm. The notion of de-evolving doesn't really hold ground. Given,
no, I know where it comes from, and I'll get into it in the BTS. It's to do with something in science that they discovered, and then I think Brandon Braga, who wrote the episode, read it and completely misunderstood the idea of these introns, I think they'd found. And it was we share introns with amazing numbers of things. And it's because we have millions of them. So having one in common with see a spider does not mean that you can devolve into one. I mean, we have, somebody said in one of the discussions I was looking up that it was we actually have more introns in common with a banana. Let's see what that crew member. Which, frankly, I'd like to see now. Anyway, I think it was kind of, it could have been, they should have just leaned into it. You're probably right, and just been they're mutating. It doesn't really matter why. Do the Ninja Turtles thing and be they all touched the last thing they mutated into. Not quite sure how you would explain Riker touching up a caveman, but,
he's a very flirtatious individual. I wouldn't play past him.
Absolutely. Say there was a planet of them and he went down there and of course he slept with one of them.
Only way that they get that they, I mean, I guess they probably just needed that to be the reason why Worf gets to go all predator.
Becoming what I think in some fan circles was called a pre-Klingon beastie.
Because you can just imagine I want to do an episode where the crew mutates into weird stuff. Okay, what are they mutating into? I don't know, other things on the ship. Okay. And they get to the parts the show opens where they're importing biological samples and Worf touches one and that's why he turns into the Predator. And they're like, why would they put that on the ship? It doesn't work. Don't do
well, that. I mean, it's not like they questioned a lot of these things. Let's not give them too much credit.
Let's just make sure that Worf has vestigial poison packs, okay? Acid spray, anybody? Good to go.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that between this and Threshold, it's amazing how consistently wrong Star Trek has gotten evolution. I mean, it's had iffy science at the best of times, but it's just amazing that two episodes have evolution as a focal point, and they're so off of the real science of it in both occasions.
Absolutely. And in both cases, they could have simply substituted mutation for the resultant effect to no harm to the science.
But no, to your initial point, though, with the whole Worf thing, I can only remember a couple of things from the first time I saw this. I would have been a fair bit older, because we've mentioned before, Next Gen was about 3 years later getting to our country compared to the US or Canada. So I probably would have been around 15 or 16, and I was smart enough to realize very early on in the episode when Beverly gets spat in the face that I'd already seen Gates McFadden's name as the director. And so I immediately put together, oh, it's to get rid of her so she can direct the episode.
Yep.
So I immediately kind of knew that. And other than that, I just remember my initial thoughts after the first time just being, what the F was that? What did I just watch? That was just, what was the purpose of that? I always tend to think, you know, Star Trek is at its best, or, you know, should really always have some kind of moral message or a point behind it. And try as I might, I cannot find any such thing for this episode. It just, I'm sure we'll get into it. I'm glad you guys are here to defend it, because, oh boy, I've got a few things to say on the negative side. So, well, before we get into that, though, I do have a little behind-the-scenes information. So I'm going to move on to that. Hopefully it's not too dry. And if you guys want to chime in at any point, please do, or comment on any of this. The first thing was going to be what I've already mentioned, that it was written into the script that Crusher would be disfigured to get rid of the character so that Gates McFadden was free to direct. This was her directorial debut, I believe. Poor woman. This is the first episode of Star Trek directed by a female cast member. The next episode directed by a female cast member was the Voyager episode Riddles, directed by Roxanne Dawson 6 years later.
That took too long.
I know, right? And still not that many, when you think. So anyway, this episode marks the fifth and final appearance of Reginald Barkley, played by Dwight Schultz. Everybody spit. On the series, he was seen again with the Enterprise crew in Star Trek First Contact and also appeared in 6 episodes of Star Trek Voyager. That baffled me. He appeared in more episodes of Voyager than he did of Next Gen. He's technically more of a Voyager character. Mind blown.
Ouch. Anyway.
This is the first episode since her promotion that Counselor Troi is seen in command of a duty shift on the bridge. When Picard and Data are later stood outside Troi's quarters, the nameplate on the door still shows her former rank of Lieutenant Commander. Oh, get on it. The events of this episode follow Dr. Crusher telling Alyssa Ogawa in Lower Decks that she'll support her promotion. Here, Ogawa is seen as a lieutenant for the first time. And toward the end of the episode, Dr. Crusher comments to Barkley that it's traditional to name new diseases after the first patient. This tradition evidently must have appeared after our own time period. Eponymous diseases have almost always been named for the first person to describe them in medical literature, such as Parkinson's disease, Down syndrome, Marfan syndrome, Cartagena syndrome, etc. Rare exceptions from our time include Legionnaire's disease, which was named for a group of people, and Lou Gehrig's disease, which was unofficially named for a famous, though not the first, sufferer. So it couldn't even get that right. The list of visible transformations include a crew member who was de-evolved into a humanoid who shed his or her skin like a snake, Dern, who'd begun to de-evolve before being killed by either Riker or Worf, Deanna Troi, who's de-evolved into an amphibian, William T. Riker, who was de-evolved into an Australopithecine, Livingston, Picard's lionfish, de-evolved into a jellyfish. I didn't even notice that. John Luke Picard begins to de-evolve, according to Data, into a lemur or pygmy marmoset. Spot had de-evolved into an iguana, and of course Reg Barkley had de-evolved into a spider-like creature, officially. And Alyssa Ogawa had de-evolved into an ape-like humanoid. Worf had de-evolved into a prehistoric proto-Klingon. And the last thing for this, coincidentally, Barkley also mentioned that spiders never bothered him in Realm of Fear, an episode also written by Brannon Braga. Probably just as well. It would be terrible to be afraid of yourself. Yeah. Anything there shocking, or any revelations coming to you guys from that?
Yeah, that all sounds honestly pretty, you know, standard to me personally. You know, it's just like, okay, I would have figured, you know, context clues.
Yeah. Did you guys spot the de-evolved lionfish?
No, someone had to point that out to me.
Yeah,
as
the
well.
Jellyfish. Yeah.
Yeah, I really didn't. It completely passed me by every time I watched this. Right, well, we're going to break this down into sections as we always do, like writing, plot, directing, acting, visual effects, music, sound, etc. But again, if the conversation goes a different way, we'll just follow along with it. And we're going to start with the writing and the plot. So I'm going to throw it open because I've been talking a lot. So I'm going to throw it open to you guys and say, what stands out for you about the writing and the plot of this episode, for positive or negative? Let's go to you, Dag, and ask you first. Why not?
Is the episode positive or negative? I'm sorry, it cut out a little
bit. No, I just mean, like, how do you, when it comes to the writing, what stands out for you as especially kind of a positive or a negative part of the plot? I mean, we kind of already talked about it. You said you kind of, you dislike the idea of them using evolution. They could have just said mutation and it would have probably been more effective.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. If I watch the episode again through that lens, which I do, and I just watched it like an hour before we started recording here, just to refresh myself on it, I think it holds up from the perspective of, oh, there's a weird mutation going around the ship. Okay, I think at the time evolution was just a buzzword, and they wanted to hit on that audience with the buzzword, but their science consultants were not as cool as like Neil deGrasse Tyson or something. To that end, I think that, you know, the framework of the episode holds up. There are some really good character moments where, you know, Picard is terrified and still has the brain to stand on that electrical panel and then fry Worf.
I see that was one of the nitpicks that I have, is that they say they can't just use a phaser because stone wouldn't be effective. But electrocution is? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Oh, I just assumed that his exoskeleton was more conductive to that kind of energy than a phaser, which is like narrow electric.
Yeah, I'm sure you could probably set it to a wide beam or something. It just seemed, yeah. Anyway, that was, I mean, it's such a nitpick, but it's kind of an example, one of many examples of kind of writing themselves into a corner and then just, in my opinion, kind of half-arsing, hand-waving it away as like, oh, whatever.
I mean, exactly. Like, I mean, yeah, it's like, yo, you can't lay like blame on Frakes as well. Like, I mean, I think he even said he knew making episodes like this is going to be shit. So, to give some credit, I actually did revisit the episode. I did appreciate the line from Riker where he says, yo, Mr. Worf, take a break. You've been working for 6 hours. That is just not something you expect to hear from a superior in the workplaces of the 21st century.
Yeah, that was a weird one for me because I was like, 6 whole hours? Like, yeah, I've worked longer than that. You know? And in Trek, they tend to, they most often play it like, oh, you're going to be awake at 6 a.m. You've got a full day's shift and you'll be working all hours. And I was like, 6 hours is not an especially long time, especially for, you know, a supposedly tough-ass Klingon. Although I do recognize that Worf's one duty position is the only one that doesn't have a chair, which probably doesn't help. On the subject of that, I would have said I like that we see Troy doing her first kind of command shift, but the fact that it's her first shift and she immediately does off to go and have a bath. Like, oh
dear. I mean, to be fair, she wasn't exactly herself in that.
I'm being facetious basically, but yeah, it's kind of, it's just unfortunate that it fell in this episode where they were all basically like, ah, screw whatever my duty is, I'm devolving. So yeah.
There's a great sequence in the observation lounge after Beverly gets acided, and Nurse Ogawa says that she's put Beverly into stasis and she's going to need reconstructive surgery. We need to get her to a starbase or something like that. Just, this is why we can't do this right now. And, you know, Barclay is all skittering about. Riker is like forgetting things. But one of the more nuanced performances there is at the end when Riker dismisses everybody. Alyssa gets up from the table using her knuckles on the table and just sort of shifts using her knuckles. And as she walks out of the door, she's like this very sort of like husky sort of posture. This is very just very subtle, but really nails the mark on the whole concept that like she's changing too.
Oh, I didn't pick up on that, but I will. It's more of an acting thing, but I kind of hated the way that, in my eyes, they kind of all overacted that. And well, it's probably the direction as well as the acting, because you don't know how to play it. But for me, it was just way too broad. Like you said, Barclay was constantly, oh, you're turning into a spider, so you've got to skitter around and talk fast. And Riker, you're now going to be incredibly slow because you're becoming a caveman. And even Picard's kind of trying to have some dignity behind the whole, oh, I'm scared, like a mammalian pygmy marmoset or whatever. I was like, oh, I don't like this at all. It's so.
I appreciated that those dynamics and those expositions. It's very, I like the variety. I just think it makes things way more interesting that it's all so different.
I see what you mean, and I get it. But for me, I think I would have preferred it if it had been more of kind of, quote unquote scientifically accurate, and it was like all the human crew members became, you know, cavemen like Riker, or like you said, members of the ape family or whatever. You can still have Worf become, you know, whatever a proto Klingon is, because it's fictional, and all the alien crew members can become whatever, you know, so you can have that variety in terms of, we've seen creatures that were kind of reptilian or various other things that were aliens. You could just do that. You don't have to have it be, I mean, I get that you have to include the series regulars as well, but I don't know. I just didn't like this idea that, like, oh, well, you became a caveman, you became a spider, you became a lizard, you're a lemur. It's like, all right, come on. It's just ridiculous. Like you said, it's this idea that we have supposedly some introns in common, and the writer read that and was like, ooh, let's run with that idea. You can turn into... No, you can't. That's really not how it works. You know.
That's why it's so much more fulfilling when you think of it as just, okay, they got the evolution part wrong. It's just mutation. And mutating along these very random lines that this mutation is affecting them, instead of it being like a uniform origin. Like, Barclay's intron is like, hey, this is a bilaterian. It's the last common ancestor between humans and spiders. So Barclay's just going to trip out this way, and the extra eyes and legs are just some random weird mutation that's happening that looks like a spider.
I don't know. It would present you with the problem of why are they having random mutations that you still have to write into the plot. I'm not saying that you couldn't, but off the top of my head, I can't really think of a good excuse why Crusher, like, they tried to make it out activating the latent intron in Barclay was accidentally activated it in everybody, which, again, it's stupid, because, I mean, how badly is... You're in sick bay, you'd think you'd have, like, a quarantine procedure or something, for crying out loud, but whatever.
A theory I would propose is maybe, you know, like, maybe to make it make sense a little bit, maybe this is, by the 24th century, we have discovered some form of the missing link, and so what would be, you know, the link is no longer missing, so it's just kind of common knowledge that there is that the way the link works between either, you know, either man and ape, or man and other species or whatever, and humankind. And so maybe just in that lore, in that, you know, 24th century understanding of science, there's again a link in that just never gets explained. I don't know, like, that was just my own, like, theory / headcanon that just came to me through this conversation.
It's been noted by a lot of Star Trek fans, but yes, Spot somehow swaps genders. Spot is a male cat, and yet in this episode is a female cat that's pregnant. Never explained anywhere, but okay.
Shapeshifter.
shapeshifter, absolutely. And I've just written down, Spot gets taken to the human sick bay. Like, they don't have a vet aboard. It's like the equivalent of, like, watching an episode of ER and somebody busts in with a dog. You know, they must have something, surely. Anyway,
could be a little bit more like, I don't know, nefarious, and be like, Data just names all of his cats Spot, so it's just another Spot that is surviving.
What, like the Simpsons Snowball too?
Every time that there's a ship-wide accident or incident or something crazy happens, like, you know, a few episodes before, the ship turned into an archive where Data had to, like, do the masks and stuff like that. And so, like, the old Spot just turned into a hay bale, and we never got her back. So we just replicated another cat and proceeded from there.
You can't replicate a life form.
You sure about that?
Come on, man. Call yourself a Trekkie.
We won't talk about that. Section 31 did that.
I would say something I just realized is that, you know, they talk about how they don't know who the father is of Spot's kittens. And I will say, like, Feline Maury Povich on the Starship Enterprise, that's something I totally would love to, you know, see.
Anyway. But no, in terms of my notes, I said a lot of people kind of act like dicks in this episode. And some examples, like when... Dr. Crusher says to Barclay, which is, I guess, kind of understandable when he's being all hypochondriac. He says, oh, you're going to die. I'd say you have like 70, maybe 80 years. And I'm like, that's great bedside manner there, Doc. And then she's has a go at Riker because he's been down in the Arboretum hitting on somebody, because of course he has. It's Riker. So, oh, stay out of the Arboretum, which might have been some cool foreshadowing. And then when the guidance system fails and they all just start taking the mick out of Worf, and they like, oh, maybe have another check of it, Mr. Worf. I'm like, oh, poor guy, man. He's doing his best. I didn't like the cold open of this episode. We mentioned it when we did our review of Threshold. I kind of think they have to end with some kind of hook or some big, powering into the episode. And this one just ends with, oh, well, I can talk to your husband, Nurse Ogawa, because in my experience, he's going to need all the help he can get into the episode. Like, really? Ugh, it's a bit lame. A bit flat. I've also put, they have to go and retrieve a torpedo, and it's going to take 3 days. Which is already like, what? You're in the 24th century. And then more importantly, Starfleet needs a report on this? Come on, man. Surely they've got more important things to worry about than that. I also forgot this was in the seventh season when Worf and Troy are dating, which it automatically loses it points as well.
I don't hate it as much as other people do necessarily. I don't know. I like that they balance each other out. That's a bit.
I never bought it. I don't know why. I kind of don't like that they, they have the dead con guy because they don't do anything about it. And to that end, like even the mutated characters, they mostly don't do anything. Like I said, in terms of the plotting, I wouldn't mind if there was a reason behind it. But it seems like it's entirely just to be able to point and go, ooh, look what they became. And okay, Riker attacks them, I suppose, but otherwise it's just like, why? What are we doing?
Worf tries to either attack or mate with, because he has like the pheromone that he's like saying. So he does stuff, and that's something.
That's fair enough. The other thing is another nerdy nitpick, but it was to say that they realize they can go to engineering because they need to get something from there. I forget what, something, warcoplasma or something. And so, we can go in there because there's no life signs registering in engineering, so that's fine. But Barclay's in there. So,
Barclay's not a life form.
maybe he wasn't there at the, spiders are very quick, they got 8 legs, so maybe he wasn't there when Data first did the scan, and then he just, they'll skittled, shut a web and just kind of, went on down just to go, boo at Picard like that.
It's purely for a jump scare, it really is. But that was all my notes. So I'm assuming we've kind of said as much as we need to as regards to the writing and where we all stand on it. Yeah,
actually, I just want one thing about, on the topic of Barclay. I think it's very realistic that even in the 24th century, there's people like Barclay who would consult basically like the Starfleet version of WebMD before they actually go to a doctor. I like that, absolutely. Even like the fact that I think that's very realistic, not something, I appreciate that little touch.
I always found Barclay very relatable as a kind of paranoid, nerdy, autistic guy, but ever since finding out Dwight Schultz's full MAGA, I'm like, oh, I don't want to associate with him. Which is a shame. So we're going to move to the direction then, because why not? I've mentioned already this is Gates McFadden's only directing credit, actually, apparently. Is there anything about Gates's direction that stands out to you, Dag, in the episode?
Well, we did kind of already touch on it, but having the crew walk away from that observation lounge meeting stands out to me as just really, I don't know. You said it was over the top. Maybe it was, but a lot of people didn't notice it.
Oh, that part? No, I mean, I didn't notice Ogawa's, but I think that's because Patty Yasutake, who, by the way, recently passed away, RIP, right. That's because she played it quite subtly, whereas the others, I think, were really overdoing it. I'm thinking of specifically the scene between Worf and Troy in 10 Forward is just, for me, and again, I don't like being critical of people who I love a lot of their work, but that scene is just terrible. Both Dawn and Curtis are just overacting like mad, and we get it. We can read between the lines. We don't need to see Worf ripping apart like a carcass of a chicken and, oh, I'm an angry person. And Troy like, oh, I need to gulp down water. It's like, okay, we get the picture. We're not six. We know what's happening here.
I would like to wager that says more about like us as the audience today than the audience in 1994. And we still get people who are like watching Discovery and going, I don't understand why all this stuff happened. And like things that we might think are over the top are like, dude, were you even paying attention? Like, what do you mean you don't understand? It was very clearly spelled out. In fact, the guy who played that character was really overdoing it to let you know, like, this is happening.
And that would be fine if it wasn't for the fact that we get the explanations later anyway. So it's like, why do we need them to overplay it? Like, oh, they're not going to get the hint that they're devolving. Well, we don't need the hint. When Picard and Data arrive on the ship, they explicitly say it.
I think it's like foreshadowing. It's set up and payoff, so to speak. The first indicator that something is,
I would agree, and I would like that if they played it subtly and creepy rather than just being over the top with it and like, all right, come on, you know. But there's a line to be drawn, I think, with like I said, you're on the wrong side of it when you go too broad, and I think they just did, whether it was Gates's direction or the way they acted it, I think, for me, in those early sequences. But again, that's just my opinion, I suppose.
The part that really stands out for me, unfortunately, is Gates's exit scene where she gets sprayed and then is covering her face and screaming and writhing. Like, yes, I totally understand that somebody who would get sprayed in the face with acid would be covering their face and screaming and writhing. But the way that it was done in this episode was like, that doesn't seem like a realistic portrayal of the kind and screaming and writhing you'd expect from someone who got.
Oh, it was after. It was the director giving herself the biggest possible moment.
Like, right.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the joys of like directing, maybe so to speak, is that you can sort of, you know, let yourself, you know, let your acting freak flag fly, for want of a better term for it.
Yeah. And I'm kind of with you, Justin, in that the first time I watched this, I was disturbed a little bit by that scene, because you never know how much you're actually going to see, you know, the mind plays tricks. And again, it was a very effective kind of screaming with absolute pain and stuff. And I was like, oh, I don't want to see her burned, horrible face. And then, like I said, I immediately realized when it was like, oh, don't worry, we've put her safely away and she'll have reconstructive surgery. And I was like, that's to get rid of her. Okay, I get it. It's not to showcase this, you know, fantastic burned face effect you might have. It's more shush, get away. You know?
We literally fridged our doctor.
Exactly. And I will say, man, that reconstructive surgery is incredibly effective, considering that by the time of Star Trek Picard, some of the ex-Borg just look messed up still. So I'd love to know where facial reconstruction fell apart in the
years. It's because Beverly left Starfleet, so those Borg didn't get the help they really needed.
In terms of the direction, I literally only have two notes, which is to say, I really liked the idea when Picard and Data come back from their seemingly pointless long mission, that the ship's kind of spinning and it's abandoned and it's almost a creepy atmosphere. I wish they kind of leaned into that a little bit more rather than the, like I said, over-the-top kind of B-movie aspect of it, because I found that quite effective. And the other note I've just got is Lizard Spot with the little cat collar on. Really? Come on. I mean, it's just...
Those spots in the iguana underneath, it's fine.
I'm just going to benefit of the doubt and be like, okay, maybe, you know, 100 million years ago, house cats used to be iguanas. I am just going to, because I don't know.
I'm not complaining about the de-evolution. It's the fact that, and yeah, maybe logically it would still be the case, but the fact that this iguana is walking around with Spot's cat collar on, as if we couldn't, you know, or like the audience would be too stupid to realize this is meant to be Spot. And it looks so silly. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. It is kind of funny. Also, I think shout out to, because I remember, I think I read or heard somewhere, this was Gates' own like addition to, you notice how in the cold open sick bay is like so full and busy and occupied, and you know, which I think that was her own deliberate choice. And I think it is very realistic where, you know, on any normal ship in the real world, something like this, there would be, you know, while the main plot is unfolding, you know, there would be people getting treated for illnesses or injuries and that sort of thing. Because normally in every other episode, there's only one patient and it is the person in that episode who is sick and injured for the week, whatever. So I like it. Yeah. I appreciate that little detail, that little level of like realism to it.
Makes even though sickly apparently has to also accommodate six cats.
I mean, you know, so there's no vet aboard the Enterprise apparently, so you got to make do.
You'd think they would think that would be an important, if you know, because Data's like, oh, there's about four or five tomcats that could be potentially the fathers of, so they know they've got domestic animals on board. Surely they have a vet. They've got a barber on the ship, for crying out loud.
Also, we need a TV studio for feline Maury Povich.
It's going to be Troy's counselor session one week. She's going to use her empathic powers.
Yeah, exactly.
He is not the father.
Yeah.
So, yeah, moving from the direction in that case, we'll move on to the acting. We've said a little bit about some of it, and I've given my kind of critiques. But what about you guys? Did you think anyone stood out in terms of the acting that you wanted to mention? Justin, I'll come to you first.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I've already, like, spoken to it, but I do appreciate, like, you know, we see Yeah, even though he's quote unquote not himself, nobody except for Data really is in this episode. That we get to see, you know, Picard in that, like, we don't normally see, I mean, we know Picard knows fear, obviously, between his dealings with the Borg and with children. But, you know, that he does know
the greatest fear, children.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I said this to another, like, friend of mine on a different podcast, but I think Picard would rather take another round with the Borg before he has to deal with even one small child. But, but, you know, it's, but it is a side of him we rarely see where he basically tries to keep up his own, like, he tries to put on a brave face or maintain some semblance of, like, you know, restraint and self-control in the face of fear, you know. So I kind of like that we don't, because normally it's just, you know, make it so and pulling this shirt down and yeah. Walk one, engage. And so, and, or long more speeches of moral philosophy. So it's just it's a different, you know, it's also a type of character we don't see Patrick Stewart play all that often. So I appreciate that about this.
Do we even know if Michael Dorn played De-Evolved Worf?
Think so.
I thought he did.
I've seen behind the scenes stuff of them all in the kind of makeup and in the process of getting it put on, and I'm sure I did see one of Michael Dorn kind of in the process of it, where you could still just about make out it was him. Fairly certain it was. I mean, if it wasn't, whoever it was did the comedy pheromone sniffing, which should really be I was going to put that on Dorn, but you know, if it's not him, anything else that stood out to you, Dag, maybe from the acting?
I mean, it's so hard for me to look back at 12-year-old me and just not be entirely fascinated by the episode altogether to really critique the acting. But, you know, I think Patrick Stewart did what he could with the lines and the direction that he was given. He really nailed the part of someone who's quite scared and the escalating level of fear that he's feeling. And also to be aware of it and communicate it. Like,
yeah, he's definitely trying, and you can see that. But what kind of makes that fall apart for me is that he's taking it very seriously. And then, like I said, you've got the other characters that are, you know, going really broad and playing it almost for laughs. And it's, yeah, pick a tone. but anyway, yeah.
Which I want to say, like, a little shout out to both Michael Dorn and, I guess, by extent, Kate McFadden, because directing. But I actually, even watching this episode just, you know, yesterday, you know, even 29-year-old me was seeing Worf, like, make his little nest on the floor. I was still kind of freaked out. I was still, like, uncomfortable and freaked out.
See, I wasn't, because I'm autistic. I do that anyway. Oh. Like, am I devolving into a Klingon? What the heck?
Oh, yeah. No, like, yeah. Okay, maybe that's another thing. I mean, I have ADHD, so I'm also neurodivergent, but I never have that. I don't know. Maybe I just don't, you know, it's a, you know, different. I don't know.
Yeah, that was another scene that I was kind of like, I get it. Like, oh, he's ripping up his bed clothes and stuff and making a nest. And then, but oh, that would be quite disturbing behavior if it wasn't for the fact that I do.
Okay.
I'm sure there's other things you could have shown him doing. And
hey, he did a really good job of being feral.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. In the kind of eating the meat scene and stuff like that, that's fair enough. But I think I could have lived without the scene in the quarters. It didn't seem to add much of anything. And yeah, just pointless. Anyway. God, I really sound terrible in this episode. People are going to really hate me, but yeah. Anyway, anything more positive on the, in terms of the acting? I thought Riker was believable, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'm not sure. Forgive me, I'm not sure, but like, I kind of like the score where, you know, there's like that little, like, whenever it closes, like, there's a close up on Riker and there's like that heartbeat soundtrack. I mean, that's a classic. I think just, you know, you know, horror or, you know, any kind of creature feature type thing, you know, the heartbeat.
I didn't notice, but I'm pleased you mentioned it, because yeah, that's fair enough if that was definitely something cool. Yeah. I'll get on to my bits and pieces about music and acting later, because I can't remember what I've written, if anything. So yeah, any other thoughts on the acting, just in general, anyone at all, before we move on?
Spiner does a great job of having Data not react to anything.
Yes, that's true, like, actually. Yeah.
Especially when, like, Barclay Spider pops up in front of the window and then falls back over, and Data's simply like, oh, I think that's Lieutenant Barclay devolving into something like a spider. And he just goes right back to work. Like there isn't a monster in crisis right on the other side of that window, Data.
It's Barclay, who cares?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, it is very, you know, Data, especially like pre-emotion chip Data. It all like tracks his behavior. And it is, I don't know, that Brent Spiner's performance, Data's behavior is almost kind of like that, like, safety blanket in this episode for me, because everyone else is acting so unlike themselves and doesn't look like themselves. So it's like that one thing you can hold on to. It's very, it's very comforting. Almost.
That's a good evaluation. I like that.
Yeah, I completely agree as well. Because I was going to say, I like that idea that the plot kind of, it keeps Data away so that when he comes back, logically, obviously, he wouldn't have, you know, mutated, evolved, whatever. And so you can have him kind of still being that voice and being your kind of comfort blanket of like, well, at least Data's all right, you know. Although, to his credit, and I'm not sure if this is the actors doing or what, but yeah, well done, LeVar Burton, for maintaining your dignity, because we don't see Geordi getting a bizarre transformation of any kind. He just disappears from the narrative completely.
I would theorize, if we did see Geordi, do you think it'd be possible that he would have turned into a bat?
No.
Oh, God, no. Way too on the nose.
With Brandon Braga writing, maybe, but
yeah, that's one of the reasons I brought the idea forward, because I thought, not scientifically, but in the spirit of this episode, so to speak, since everyone is a different animal.
Or given the kind of comedy lizard with a cat collar on, whatever it is like, I don't know, like a lizard or whatever, but still with the visor on.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, this must be LaForge.
Honestly, like, I bet they couldn't reconcile that. Like, oh, what happens to Geordi? It's like, he's blind. He probably gets eaten by Worf. So we're just not going to show that.
Yeah. He survived, thankfully. So, yeah. I only have one kind of little thing for the VFX production design, if you'll indulge me. And it's to say that Michael Westmore described his work in this episode as proving to be his greatest challenge. He says, everybody mutated. I used the right word. Riker became an Australopithecine, Troy an aquatic animal, Barclay a spider, he recalled. We never would have been ready if the episode hadn't miraculously fallen right after Christmas, but we worked through the holiday. Oh, you poor guys. Bless you. You sacrificed Christmas for this? Anyway. Go ahead.
No, I was going to track, because one of my notes was that the set design was really giving spirit Halloween to me, with the fact that there's like the fake cobwebs everywhere.
Yes!
Okay. You just put it all together for me, okay? Crusher dies, and then for however long Picard and Data are away, the Enterprise is free real estate, so a spirit Halloween moves in. Now I just have to edit this episode to include like a spirit Halloween banner everywhere. So like when Data's like, Captain Picard, the Enterprise isn't at the rendezvous. It's over here. And then it shows the shuttle like going towards the Enterprise, and it's just sort of spinning in space. Just put like a spirit Halloween logo over the main shuttle bay door.
What is your Venmo handle? I will pay you money to get this into the world. I need to see that. I will share it on all socials far and wide, because that is just too good to remain. Like, I say, I love you already. That is too good to not be on. Like, I need this in my life. Inject it into my veins until October 31st, and then have it be gone, like a spirit Halloween. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm going to move to the music and sound, because I know you have maybe some things to say about that. First of all, let me just say that Genesis actually won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Individual Achievement in Sound Mixing for a Drama Series. So maybe that was one of the things you picked up on, just in the kind of heartbeat motifs and everything. So, yeah, very good. The only thing I noticed was a kind of sweet motif when Ogawa announces that she's pregnant, which I kind of thought was a nice little touch. And that's it. So yeah, anything from the music and sound from you two guys?
No, I think we have deconstructed this episode effectively.
I mean, in my case, you've eviscerated it probably quite effectively.
Just like that guy at the helm.
Yeah, the poor guy, honestly.
It's all very metaphorical. It's all symbolic. I mean, it's like, you know, we're all like this. That's the symbolism of all of this that binds this whole episode, both the episode and this podcast together. It's all connected, like just like, you know, the webbing from Spirit Halloween across the Enterprise. You
know? It's all connected. So no, I'm going to move us to the section that would come next then, which is kind of the audience and critics' reaction to the episode, what I call subspace communications.
Incoming transmission.
And as I said, this series of divisive least episodes, I've been kind of starting with a critic's response, because I like to see maybe if there's a, you know, a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy idea that critics would say something's bad and that's why it gets a reputation and whatever, or just to see, you know, if there's a little bit of a, you know, divided opinion in critical circles before I obviously put it on social media, and because I don't get a lot of responses often on social media, so just something else to look at. So I'm going to start with the critics' response to this episode. Let me start by saying, in 2015, What Culture ranked this the 7th best episode of all time in the Star Trek science fiction universe. They noted as a horror-themed episode of Star Trek, remarking that Genesis is terrifying in the way it unfolds so very subtly, watching the crew regress into primal animals. Is that a joke? Anyway, in 2017, IO9 noted Genesis for being one of the more bizarre sci-fi stories of the franchise, noting how different characters devolved into frightening creatures like Worf turning into a giant super Klingon. In 2018, The Gamer ranked this one of the top 25 creepiest episodes of all Star Trek. In 2020, GameSpot noted the episode for having some of the most bizarre moments of the series, such as Spider Barkley, Worf's Venom Spray, and Ape Riker. In 2020, the senior curator at the Museum of Pop Culture listed this among 4 Star Trek franchise episodes they suggested watching during the pandemic. Why? In 2020, Screen Rant said this was fun to watch, but also one of the scariest next-gen episodes. In 2021, they said this was one of the classic and memorable episodes of the television series. And finally, this episode received the book Star Trek 101's Spock's Brain Award for the worst episode in the Next Generation. To which I've written quite correctly. So, yeah, that's the critic response. Like I say, I did put out on social media to ask our audience, what did you think of the episode? And I think I got a range of responses, so I'm going to, you know, deal with some of them now. First of all, from the Hit or Miss Star Trek Facebook group, Sci-Fi Queens, hi, Nita. Just had her on the podcast. Says, I actually liked this episode a lot. There were a few things that were odd, but the overall episode was good. On Star Trek Forever group, Scott Brady says, much like Riker in his devolved state, I felt like my IQ dropped during this episode. Star Trek has a history of junk DNA science, and this is probably the prime example. A human wouldn't evolve into an arachnid, thank you. Even without the junk science, it's pretty dumb. To be fair, I don't really like most attempts Star Trek makes to be scary, so I was already predisposed to dislike this. Cristobal NC says, minus 10 stars, Spider Barkley was too much. Brian Thorne says, fun with DNA. Caution, no scientist was involved in the writing of this episode. Joseph Maloney says, I classify this as a writer's strike episode. April Walsh responds, it was fun nonsense. When it was written, evolutionary studies weren't as evolved as they are now, so just kind of had to take it on face value for entertainment's sake. It's fun to know how much DNA is shared with other species on Earth. Tony White says, ah, good old Barkley's protomorphosis syndrome. Let's see, on TNG Fan Club, Matt Graham says 5 out of 5, one of the best. Sharon Dubose says, excellent episode for a Halloween podcast. Yay. Jay Diltz gives 5 stars. Jonathan Moreland says 5 out of 5. Rick Murphy says 10. Definitely a next-gen fan group. Over on Star Trek Family, Lisa Bateman says, fabulous episode, definitely a 5. Barbara Chaffetz Viol Oropello says, I was terrified of Worf. Andrew Zekowski, this is the one I referenced earlier, says, features Dr. Crusher's massive acid in the face reaction. I laughed so hard when I learned Gates McFadden directed the episode. She gave herself her moment. let's see. Michael Howard says, I loved it. For me, it's a 5 out of 5. Dennis Earl Morrison just says, Spider Barkley. And that's all of the fan feedback that I have on Genesis. So, anything there shocking for any of you guys?
Nope. I mean, to the critic who said it deserves the Spock's Brain worst episode, I'm just going to say, did you see Code of Honor?
Yeah, kind of. I knew that was going to come up. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Shades of Grey. Like, those two. I mean, if we
I would still rather watch Shades of Grey than this. At least it's only a clip show. But yeah, Code of Honor is...
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to defend extreme blatant racism.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Code of Honor. That is... that. I'm not much of a skip... episode person. I normally just power through it, but that is nothing. And
it's
no
very dodgy. Anyway, fair enough. It's actually the slightly better response, I would say, than I kind of was expecting overall, but fair enough. We're gonna move on to the I'll give our favorite things and then our conclusions, and then we can get out of here and all start celebrating Halloween. So first of all, we're gonna ask everyone's favorite character, and again, I'll go clockwise. So Justin, who's your favorite character in this and why?
In this episode?
Yes.
I don't ooh, geez. Like then suddenly my brain, like, oh, my brain's just like, you know, like the Wheel of Fortune or something. It's just going through all, like, it's like just spin around. I don't know where it's going to stop. I mean, you know, I guess I'm going to give it to Data because, like I said, he's that warm blanket in this episode. He's reassuring. He's, you know, himself. He's comforting. He's analytical. He really, you know, kind of saves the day in this episode by being, you know, also by being immune and, you know, not turning into an advocus.
I don't know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fair enough. So how about you, Dag? Favorite character in this and why?
Worf.
Okay, I have to know why.
Well, I mean, as a kid, I didn't understand why he was so angry. But like now when I'm sitting at my shift for 6 hours, it's exactly how I feel. And I wish my boss was like Riker and just like, dude, take a break. You know, you're not yourself without a Snickers. I'm not myself without an Intron.
They should have absolutely done that, Mr. Worf. Have a Snickers. Why? If you're not yourself when you're hungry, you turn into a pre-Klingon beast. that's fair enough. I think I just put my favorite character was Data for having the sense not to get involved in this rubbish. I was going to give it to Spot's Kittens for the same reason, but yeah, Data was pretty good too. So what was your favorite moment or scene, Justin, in the app?
Oh, that's my favorite moment or my favorite scene. I mean, I'm actually going to probably give it to, you know, the little mini chase between Picard and Worf, because like I said, I'm a sucker for those, like, alone on a derelict space ship station, like pursued by, you know, like, I just love those types of story, because it's like, you know, it's tense and there's like, you know, the cat and mouse thing, and it's like, you know, or, you know, the way it plays out. And there, I felt like genuine tension when Picard's like, you know, deck 17, and like he's like trying to push the button and it's not working. Like, I mean, it's generally like, you know, and I think it's a moment's really gone unrecognized as we've discussed this. So shout out to that.
Okay. You just like the Alien movies.
yeah. Well, it's weird. I actually have only seen, it's not even the Alien movies. I just like that. For some reason, I just find something oddly, you know, captivating about that. Again, like, you know, isolation, like haunt, you know, enclosed environment pursued by something that you can't kill. It's just, I find that whole thing very, you know.
And when it's in space, it's even better.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, in space, no one can hear you scream. And also, you know, like, you can't, it's not like in a haunted house where you can just run out of the house. Like, it's like you run out of the ship, you know, you're going to suffocate and freeze and die. So.
This would be a good time to quickly plug and mention that over on our Silver Screen podcast, we're reviewing Event Horizon for our Halloween special. Ooh. So if you enjoy horror in space and things that might be divisive, or some would say crap, maybe stay tuned for that. So yeah, how about you anyway? Over to you. What's your favorite moment or scene and why?
The jump scare. I have the pleasure of introducing a lot of people to Star Trek when they get to know me. And so they'll be like, oh yeah, what's your favorite episodes and stuff like that? And we'll go through like 10 or 15 of them over the course of a couple of months. And we always get to Genesis and I always make popcorn and it's always fun to just have everybody go, huh? Ah! So
it's like, yeah.
Say this. I can see what you mean. Jump scare is a good little moment. My favorite moment was just the stuff at the beginning. I liked the kind of just the everyday on the Enterprise was fine. I thought the little weapon tests and things. Do you have a favorite line you could quote back from this, Justin?
Oh, honestly, like, I think just, like I said, Riker saying, you know, Mr. Worf, take a break.
I was going to say take a 6 hour break. No, take a break. It's been 6 hours.
Yeah, it's been 6 hours. Yeah, no, exactly. Because, like, again, that's just like, in what is such a normally horrifying episode, that is just like a splash of, you know, like, you know, that's a warm blanket before Data comes against.
Yeah,
like,
that was the most science fiction-y thing in the episode, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I need to hear from what all my bosses have just never had, or not most of them haven't, you know, had the
fair enough.
Had been the Riker enough to say.
Fair enough. Then were you going to say the same thing, Doug?
No.
Okay. What was your favorite line then?
Can I have two? Because there's two that are good. Yeah. The first one is obviously, and you guys will just obviously get it one right away, is Worf, open your mouth.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I know what's happening. I know what's happening. Oh, God. But the second one is because it is so out of character for Riker, it's so informative the way that Frakes says the line. In that observation lounge scene, Geordi comes in, is like, I've got security teams looking for Worf, but you know, we need to elevate to a security level one security. What do you think? And Riker's like, I don't know. What do you think? And Geordi's like, I think we should. And Riker's like, okay, sounds good.
You'll take care of that
security thing, won't you? And Geordi leaves. And I'm just like, every day, because I work in tech, every day that is something that I encounter. It's just like, you mentioned something about coding that I don't know, but you understand it. And all I need to do is confirm that you can do it. So yeah, you go do that code thing. Got it.
It's probably a whole lot of Star Trek captains that just act like that anyway.
Yeah. Oh, God, exactly. Like the fact that, I mean, you know, Riker is always, I think, always just has a touch of like, he's a bit of a himbo the way I see it. And this is just like, that's turned up to like 11 in this episode because he does get more brawny and less brainy, literally, scientifically. So I think that's just, you know.
It's Worf that was the one chasing after the girl. My favorite line was from the end of the episode. It was, he turned into a spider and had a disease named after him from Crusher. And then Troy's response, I think I'd better clear my schedule for the next few weeks, to which I've just written the response, ha 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 ha, a man died.
Oh.
Anyway. Before I alienate people any further, I'm going to chime in with my limerick. For the episode in my poetry corner, forgive me, it's a little bit snarky, more so than I remembered, but you know, why not? While I'm baking myself unpopular, here goes with my limerick for Genesis. When Barclay comes down with the flu, Dr. Crusher knows just what to do. Turn the crew into creatures from B-movie features. My word, this story is poo.
Oh.
I could not resist. So anyway, that's now out of the way. So we're going to move to our conclusions and our scores out of 5 stars or Starfleet Deltas. I'm going to do something different and unique. And I'm going to go first because I feel like the only way is going to be up from my particular conclusion and score. Oh, you'll see why. Apologies if you're a fan of this episode. I'm not yucking anybody's yum. I'm just giving my honest opinion. Please don't hate me. I said this is just gubbins. It's awful. It's nonsense. It would be laughable if it weren't played so straight. The science makes Tom Paris's Warp 10 evolution look positively rational. The story is thinner than graphene. The acting and premise are straight from a straight to video old B movie. The whole thing has absolutely no point. It doesn't develop any storylines or characters. It's not camp enough to be funny, too fantastical to be good sci-fi, and ultimately nothing that happens matters. I would normally never advocate for this, but the only way for me to even begin to rectify this in headcanon is to pretend it was all some nightmare or fever dream someone was having. I really tried to find something redeeming or positive. Okay, it looks good and has the sense of next generation familiarity at first, but so do 175 other episodes. There's a slim attempt at humor, but it's pathetic and, like much of this thing, tasteless. If you like this and you get something out of it, then fair play to you. I have to be honest to my experiences, though. It's not even good Halloween-y fun, like, say, Catspaw. I hate it. I just do. Your mileage may vary, but I have to do something unprecedented here and give it 0 stars out of 5. The first time I've ever done that, I just could not find anything to latch onto in this episode. So... yeah, apologies for that, for dragging us down into that area. Now you see why I went first. So, Dag, I'm going to come to you. Lift us up a bit here.
Mike, you need a Snickers, man.
Maybe I was watching it, like, you know, with friends and a few beers. I might appreciate it more, but I have to be honest, I hate this.
Have you been working for 6 hours, Mike? You sound like you need a break.
No, that's Twix. Despite the scientific inaccuracies, which, you know, maybe you weigh that a lot more heavily in terms of its impact in you, despite the scientific inaccuracies, this episode is just good fun. It's a weird sort of it steps outside of Trek's usual boundaries to present something that isn't a candle ghost. And I think it's a really cool exploration, and just maybe from even like a lore aspect, like how it feeds into the lore of like, what did the ancient Klingons look like? What did the ancient Betazoids look like? Just the sense that like Troy shares DNA with a Betazoid or even a human frog, because she's half human too. You know, despite Data's line, it's like, she's no longer human. It's like, no shit, Data. She was half Betazoid too. Thanks. I love this episode. I look forward to it. It's not a Halloween episode. It didn't come out at Halloween. As a Halloween episode, there are better entries in the franchise. But it's good fun. This is absolutely a 4 out of 5.
Wow. Very high score. Okay.
I'm always the optimist though. Like, I'm the one who loves this stuff, and I just make it make sense to me.
Fair enough. Yeah. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm glad we have somebody to stick up for it, so that I just don't feel like I'm, you know, kicking a puppy or something down here. Okay, Justin, how about you conclude then score, please?
Yeah, no, I, you know, I'm like of the same school of thought, Dax. So, you know, so I feel you were like, you know, glass half full type of person. And same thing where I appreciate that this episode tries something different when, you know, and like, sure, yeah, there, and that's one thing I think justifies this episode's existence in and of itself, is that it doesn't just, it's not another just like cookie cutter TNG episode. It doesn't just play the hits. It, you know, it tells a different story. It creates a different mood, an atmosphere. We see the characters in way, physically and from a behavior standpoint, in ways that we haven't seen them before. And so I appreciate the great experiment of this. And, you know, the fact that it does create, I think for me, it establishes, it succeeds in creating atmosphere in a lot of occasions. And there are some genuinely amusing, you know, moments as well, even if the logic and the science behind it is not always as, you know, sound as other Star Trek or sci-fi in general episodes. So, but because it's, you know, it is so different, and for my money, the actors and, you know, Beverly's my favorite character. I, you know, because Gates McFadden was the only cast member who answered my fan letters as a kid, I have a soft spot for Gates. I mean, you know, exactly. So I have a very soft spot for her, and the fact she's directed this episode, you know, the makeup, it's also different. And so, and with all that, and I think it, you know, mostly sticks the landing, and I have to also give it a 4 out of 5.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
We're not going to be the dormant genes around here.
Well, that's fair enough. I mean, so with with all three scores combined and divided by the three of us here, even despite my zero, that tips Genesis just into the realm of a hit, using my own metric, with a score of 2.6 out of 5. So, yeah, just over the middle part. It's I clearly could not do enough to destroy this episode. So, probably for the best.
Anyway. I don't know. I actually think it deserves a spread. When I was on here, Nemesis got 2.9, I believe. And
oh, Nemesis is orders of magnitude better than this crap.
I think it's better than Nemesis, but that's me.
So we laugh off the absurdity and conveniently ignore the trauma and the dead crewman. It just remains for me to wrap up this spooky season episode by thanking our guests who hopefully had some Halloween fun. Thank you, Justin, first of all, for coming. And, did you have a good time?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, even though you can't see, but I am still smiling despite your repeated attempts to rip this episode a new one. I still have a big dumb smile on my face, and I will not apologize for that.
No, I'm glad we had some defenders of it. I would have felt awful if it was, you know, if we'd torn it down and it was going to get terrible scores. But I feel like I did my part by dragging it down to at least a 2.6. There we go. And do you have any way you want to shout out where people can find you on the internet, Justin?
Oh, yeah. I'm on the, you know, socials. You can find me on TikTok and Twitter at just a Barry Smith, and all the quote unquote meta apps, Facebook, Threads, Instagram. Justin Avery Smith. I understand I should probably streamline my branding a bit more, but, you know, I've already plugged it, so you're gonna look for me that way, so it's too late. I'm not changing. I still have a big dumb smile on my face despite all of it.
Awesome. Well, that's good then. At least we had some Halloween fun. So how about you, Dag? First of all, did you have a good time, and secondly, where can people find you on the internet?
I always have a great time here on the show, and I asked you earlier, I was like, do I have any other shows planned with you? And you're like, I don't have anything for you till the end of the year. And I was like, oh, So yeah, if you have any vacancies, feel free to hit me up on Discord.
Absolutely, and I will speak to everyone properly once I get a chance to sort out next year's schedule and see if anybody wants to come on any of those, because at the moment, there's pretty much all just open. So, and I am coming back with more Trek next year.
You can find me on everywhere at Trek Nexus. That's on the Twitter, Blue Sky, Twitch. Yeah, that's pretty much where I inhabit.
Awesome. Fair enough. And you can always find us all over the internet in the places that, if you're watching on YouTube, will be up on screen. I will edit in the banner that has all of our various social media links. You can reach the podcast that way, or if you want to leave a message for DK, I'll always pass it on because he tends to be more of a hermit than me. And you can access my social medias at most of those places as well. If you're not watching on YouTube and you're listening on a different podcatcher, there'll be a link tree in the episode description that will lead you to all the same places, and you can find us there. And again, if you want to comment on any of the episodes, agree, disagree, you know, politely, just, you know, put yourself forward for future episodes, anything like that, or just have a nice Star Trek discussion. We're always up for that, and you can find us all over the place, probably just doing just that. And speaking of our other podcast, as I briefly just was, we're actually taking a short break to catch up on that other one, to prep some things and to deal with our personal lives for a while. But prepare yourselves, because in just 3 weeks, we are going to be back with the last episode review of this series, as myself, DK, and returning guest Nita examine a controversial farewell. That's all I'll say about that. And then in December, as we head into the festive season, rather fittingly, we're on a quest to find God as we conclude our infamous stories season with a full movie review. And I think we can all basically extrapolate which one that's going to be. So, yeah, please join us for all of that and more. Check out both of our podcasts. And in the meantime, do remember, we are Starfleet. Live long and prosper. Happy Halloween.
Live long and prosper.
You have been listening to the Hit or Miss Star Trek podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material by DK. Please remember to like this episode and spread it throughout subspace. Subscribe to the Hit or Miss YouTube channel and follow us online. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the link tree listed in the episode's description. For any queries or to apply to be a guest on the show, you can also email homstartrek@gmail.com. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcasts Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Mike's Podcasts. Hit or Miss Podcast was based on an idea by Michael Wilson and Will Templer. Thank you for joining us. We hope you'll be back, but for now, hailing frequencies closed.
Try to warp out of here.